I'm Meryl MacDonald. 27 years ago, I founded my firm Gega MacDonald on the premise that organizations don't transform, people do. Since then, as we've worked with many of the world's most admired global companies to navigate the human struggle of change, one thing has remained true. Leadership matters. A lot. Let Go and Lead is a podcast about what it takes to be a leader and how great ones balance the head and the heart to transform the companies that transform the world. Today, I'm excited to welcome Dr. Luana Boykins, Transformation Officer for SSS, the leading insurance company in Puerto Rico. She's a seasoned operations leader with a proven feel for the people's side of change. Luana talks with me about the power of asking the hard questions and how they often lead to moments of needed change. We also discuss what it takes to really build a culture of wellness and strategies to ensure that team members are taking care of themselves. Hi, Luana. Thanks for joining me today. Since we talked, I've been so excited about getting you to join the podcast.
Thank you, Meryl. It is a pleasure to be here, and I'm honored to be a part of this with you.
Well, I'm honored to have you. And you have such a fascinating background, so I can't wait to jump into it. Can you just, first of all, tell our listeners just a little bit about your background and how you got to where you are now and where you are now?
Sure. Today, I am the Transformation Officer for SSS, the Blue Cross Blue Shield of Puerto Rico. My career started not in healthcare. I actually joined the military out of high school, spent 7 years in the United States Army. I'm a Gulf War veteran. And as I exited the military, got into call center, which was exciting because every day was a new day across various industries. So I got to learn a lot about many different spaces. And as I worked through things, I found myself in pharma in 2006. And I have been in the healthcare industry in a variety of roles, from chief operating officer to director of workforce management, leading transformations, always in operations, because that's, I think, where the fun happens. That's the heart of the organization. And now here we are today.
Well, looking from your background behind you there, it doesn't look like you're in Puerto Rico.
I'm not in Puerto Rico. My roots start in Nebraska. And so behind me is a Nebraska Cornhusker football player. So that's near and dear to my heart. And today I am in Omaha, Nebraska. So.
Ah, great. Well, as they always say, right, you can take the grill off the farm, but you can't take the farm out of the grill.
That is so true. It's so true.
Yeah, that's great. Well, tell me, you know, we had talked a little bit about just your perspectives on what the difference is of really coming up through the Army and then ending up in corporate America. And that was one of the things I just found so fascinating. So we'd love to discuss it here.
Yeah, absolutely. When I think back of my time in the military compared to my time in corporate America, I think the one thing that stands out the most is camaraderie. The camaraderie in the military is very different than the camaraderie that we have in corporate America today. So two very different sides of the coin and looking at teamwork in a very different way.
And so can you tell us more about that? Because it sounds like this is an example where we use the same words but mean different things.
Absolutely. So camaraderie in the military, while organizationally everyone, it's very clear, everyone's role, everyone's place, the structure, you really don't have to think about who is important, what's important, and what your role is and how you fit in the bigger picture. So you lean on those around you and those on your team, because the situation oftentimes is very different. It is a life or death situation when you're in really critical times. You turn to corporate America, and we use the word teamwork. Not always are people's roles, responsibilities, teams. We talk about matrixed organizations, who's responsible for what, who's accountable for what. And sometimes there's a lot of noise that happens within that. So the level of camaraderie you get is very different than what you would have in the military, where there's a bit more structure, a bit less creativity, right? Because everybody knows their place, role, space, and alignment. And in corporate America, there's a bit of free thinking and creativity and how do we solve problems? And if you do it across the aisle, it doesn't matter. And in the military, it's a bit different.
What do you see that as a positive or a negative or neutral, the creativity aspect?
That's a really great question. I think there's a time and place for creativity. And so what I mean by that is oftentimes, and I'm going to use healthcare as an example, when we have a problem to solve and it has to do with a member's service, health, receiving service in a critical health situation, sometimes creativity isn't always the first thing you need to go through. It's going through the standard steps to make sure all the basics are covered before you get creative. And sometimes in those situations that are really, really critical and could be a life or death situation, creativity shouldn't be the first place you start at. That's just Luana's opinion, though. Other people may see the world a bit differently and say creativity is the place to start because you clearly couldn't get it fixed the right way, right? The first way, if you followed all the steps.
Yeah.
So I think there's a time and place for creativity. I think it just really depends on how it's applied.
And is there any time and place for creativity in the military?
I think because it's a life or death situation, I don't know that creativity comes into it. I will tell you the structure. We knew what time to get up. We knew what we were doing. We knew who we were working with. You have SOPs for everything, whether it's tightening a bolt or obviously how you dress, how you look, how you're women, how your hair is positioned. All those things are put in place for very specific reasons for the safety of not just you, but the individuals around you to deliver a mission. So creativity, I think, gets in the way a bit.
And you mentioned SOPs, standard operating procedures.
Absolutely.
Yeah, for those who might not know that term. Yep, yep.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, it's just so interesting to think about that. So what really did you go through as you came out of that very, very structured environment to one that was more fluid?
Yeah, I found myself in a situation that my transition from the military actually going into the call center, I'm going to say, was a blessing. It was a very easy transition. When I look at operations, while not a life or death situation, it is about performing the basics every day, right? Even though every day is a restart and an opportunity to do things better and an opportunity to leverage some creativity, every day operationally, when we walk into a call center, it's about servicing our members, servicing our providers. How do we solve problems? We use the standard operating procedures every single day. We follow a path. We follow a structure. And then you apply the creativity. So every day for me, and that's why I lean to operations, I love that every day is a new day and we have a new challenge in front of us every day and we can leverage the creativity, but still the basis is a foundation of consistency.
And of course, now you're leading a significant transformation. How are you leaning into all of those things at this point for your leadership?
Yeah. So one, communication is key. And it's about the who, what, where, when, how. And the biggest thing is about the why. Reminding folks every day in this transformation, no matter how hard it gets, why are we doing it? Because that's the center. That's the center of the project. That's the center of every day's work. The consistency is creating a cadence in the things that you can create that give people an opportunity for similarity, where it gives them a place to be comfortable and know this is going to be consistent every day. And that's one less thing that I have to worry about change, because change is really significant in transformation. And every day something is going to be different. There is no question about that. But the things that you can create, the things that you can keep consistent, example, weekly touch bases, team meetings, structure around the project, project readouts, communication to the larger team about the impacts. Those things give people comfort and stability to be able to get in the uncomfortable places and be present in them, because it isn't their whole world shifting at the same time.
mean, you do have a lot shifting. Can you just tell us a little bit about what the transformation is all about?
Yeah, absolutely. So our focus within SSS is to deliver a healthier, better life and greater health to the people of Puerto Rico. And part of that within our health plan is to really level up our technology platforms. And that is from when someone comes in and selects a health plan to when you call the call center, to how you receive and get care, to how you coordinate care, even to the point of how you pay for your bill, all the way to how you engage your provider engages us. Every step along that path is something that we in the transformation are looking at to make it a better experience and to delight our members and our providers across our entire network to really build a healthier Puerto Rico.
And I know you're somebody who is really excels at solving problems and coming up with solutions. What do you see as the real keys to problem solving?
There are a couple of things. One, I would say, is being okay asking the hard questions, right? It's not always are the hard questions very directly asked. And the second piece of that answer is being okay going, I don't know, but I'll find out, right? There's an educational piece when the hard questions are asked, because those are the moments that you learn and you uncover and you find. And that's the opportunity for people to talk about how do you change the position? How do you change the process? How do you change the outcome? And without asking the hard questions in problem solving, or even being okay saying, I just don't know, but let me find out. I think those two pieces are key.
Of course, we all get the concept of a hard question, but in this context, what do you think makes those questions so hard?
Early in my career, I was taught, I went to a training and it was a group of directors. And the thing that stuck in my head, it was about communicating and problem solving. And it was the statement that came out of it, the one key learning was focus on the issue, not the person. And so I think sometimes when people start to ask the hard question, they feel like they're asking the question of the person, and the person they're asking is the one that's in the bullseye. The way the question is positioned to not focus on the person, but to focus on the topic or the situation or the problem, then shifts the direction to take the emotion out of it and start to do the fact-finding and the problem-solving that's underneath it. So when you focus on issue, problem, not the person, that's when you start to ask the hard questions, because you're taking the direct bullseye away from the person.
Yeah, I love that. So instead of feeling adversarial, it's feeling like we're in this together and the problem's the problem.
Right, exactly. Yeah, yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
That's really good. You're also known for having a lot of superstars on your team.
Yeah.
How do you, first of all, find them and attract them? And then how do you really motivate them? And I know like protecting their energy is really important to you.
Absolutely. I will say I am absolutely blessed of the team that I have surrounding me. I have an amazing group of individuals, smart, inquisitive, curious, happy-go-lucky, really want to solve the problem, are here for the greater good. And for me, like you said, protecting their energy is super important. And I think there's two things that I've learned later in my career that I wish I had learned early in my career. One is meeting people where they are. And what I mean by that is not always, sometimes when people show up, what they're bringing to the table that day is literally the best they can bring. And that's okay. Because not every day is that day. Life happens. And when you start to recognize that, people then start to share with you those moments when they're not at their best. And they'll say, I can't show up the way I want to, and I need your help doing that. And that's when you can create this partnership that becomes, because not every day am I perfect either. So when I can say to my team, wow, today is really a hard day for me, they all swoop in and surround and protect. And we do that for each other. So I wish I'd learned that earlier in my career, because not every day is a great day for somebody. And that's okay.
Yeah. And people always want to show up and do the best they can in the moment, right? But it's not always a good moment.
Absolutely.
For whatever reason. Yeah.
Yeah.
But in the other aspect of energy is, you know, so many superstars suffer burnout because they're so capable that they keep stepping into the breach even when they shouldn't, right?
Absolutely.
And how do you manage that?
Really direct feedback. There are days that I will say to someone, I need you to take a day. You're off. Your tone is off. The way you're showing up, the perception is not what you want to deliver. So I need you to go ahead and log off. But Luana, I have a lot to do. I understand that it'll be here tomorrow. We'll work that through tomorrow. I'll step in for you, but I need you to step away. I need you to clear your head. Because not always when you're in the middle of firefighting and trying to get the best out of everyone and trying to put your finger in all the holes and touch all the right things, do you recognize or do you have an awareness of how you are showing up? And so having somebody to just tap you on the shoulder and go, it's okay to go take some time. I remind people on my team, go have lunch. When I see them too late, what are you doing? And try to really reinforce balance, because it's easy to say, but then looking for the behaviors to help create that balance is something that I make sure that I do. And I ask my leaders to do for their people. When you're not feeling well, don't try to show up. Take care of yourself, because you being healthy, your family needs you, we need you, but we need you healthy. We don't need half of you, because half of you between lots of different priorities is not a good distribution. So,
yeah, and I suppose it's especially critical when you're a healthcare company.
Absolutely.
Live the brand.
That's absolutely true. And quite frankly, not always are we in healthcare the best at recognizing we're in healthcare and we should be leading the way and by taking care of ourselves, taking a chance for people. Oh, I'll give another example. We're coming towards the end of the year. I just last week in a team meeting reminded my team, please make sure you plan your PTO. Put it on the calendar. Please put it on my calendar so I don't call you. But it's okay. You can call me. No, when you're on PTO, go away, decompress, be. So when you come back, you're energized and you feel really good. That's what I want for folks.
Yeah, that's great. I'm going to come back. You were talking about the importance of like directness.
Oh, yeah.
And as you think about directness and decisiveness, how does that intermingle with collaboration from your standpoint? How do you balance the two?
When I think of collaboration and I think of directness, I also think of awareness. So when I'm at the table, like with you, Meryl, my energy and how I show up to collaborate with you, I look for. And in a most recent leadership session, when we did the equine event, led me to these places of our energies matching and our energies being able to be together. And then we can be direct and we can have direct conversation with each other. When I show up in a more assertive, dominant way, directness then becomes or is can be perceived as being aggressive. It may not be my intention, but if I'm not aware of how I'm showing up, then collaboration gets hurt and directness becomes, it goes back to that person, not the problem. And then you've got rub. So I think collaboration is about showing up. And then you have an opportunity to build relationship and be direct. But then the direct is in both directions, not just one direction, one to the other.
What's your thought on how you encourage others to be direct? So when you're talking about matching that.
Yeah, it really is an awareness of watching those around you and helping to coach them on their awareness. I'll give an example. I have a young lady on my team. The perception that she brings forward, she understands her job. She understands her role. She understands the space she sits in. But when she comes to the table, how she comes to the table doesn't represent all of those things she knows. And so in our coaching session, I said, have you ever taken the opportunity to read the book Emotional Intelligence? And she was like, no. And we went on Amazon and we looked for it. And I shared with her the story that when I read the Emotional Intelligence book and I took the test, I was, you know, when I first took it, I thought, I'm going to do great. I'm going to knock it out of the park. I got my results. And I was like, what is this? Because the way I thought I was showing up didn't show through my emotional intelligence scores, which told me there was a disconnect in how I was showing up for other people and how they were perceiving how I showed up. So it gave me insight into me and my behavior so that I could change, so that I could be a better participant in that collaboration and teamwork and as a leader. So that's, I think, the biggest piece.
Well, and that was a great way of encouraging her to take the test, right? Because because you obviously survived getting that feedback.
I did.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's interesting. She did go out and buy the book. And she shared with me, she bought the book and she said she was reading it. And I said, did you take the test? And she said, I did, but I'm not sharing it. And I just had to chuckle because I was thinking she did the same thing I did. She went in, she took the test. She had that moment. She was like, oh, golly. So I'll be interested to see as she's going through her journey, how the insight shifts for her and changes how people perceive her, because I think that's important as she grows in her career.
And as you think about, you know, coming back to the transformation,
yeah,
what are the competencies you think are most critical for a leader who's helping people through a transformation?
The competencies in a leader that are leading a transformation, one, I think, is surrounding yourself with people who are experts in their field and letting them, and this isn't a specific leadership competency, like a job requirement kind of thing, but I think one of the things that's most important is being able to pick the right people to surround you in their level of expertise and allowing them the space to do what they're really good at and directing and guiding. So from a competency perspective, it's about decision making, it's about interpersonal skills, it's about communication methodology, and it's really about how you develop, manage, and support the people that are around you as the transformation goes forward. Because if you've got those things and those dominoes in play, all of the things will come together and the tasks will be defined. The project will be aligned. People will have the hard discussions. People will raise up issues. And then you can work through the task because you won't have the underlying people friction, because people are trying to do other people's jobs. When you understand your role, what your expertise is, and you let them run their role, it all comes together. And I know it's really simple, but that's what I've seen as experience.
Yeah, I was thinking about that as you so clearly articulated. It sounds simple when said, but not so easy to do, right? But you know, one of the things you brought up is just the importance of leading people who have different functional expertise than you do, which, you know, we often find is very difficult for leaders, because leaders are generally come up through a function and are very comfortable with being one of the people who knows the most about this subject. Right. And suddenly you end up in a role where you're leading people who know about things you might have almost no clue about.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I find myself in spaces asking a lot of questions. I also say often, can you say that again slow? because what I'm doing is I'm drawing a picture of the process in my head. I'm a visual, and having them explain it to me, not because I want to be the technician and not because, but I really want to understand the process. And oftentimes they'll go out of their way to help me understand it so that I can support them. And then I walk away having learned something new, them having shared their expertise, and both of us win.
You know, it's making me think too about how deeply you need to engage people as you're going through something like this, which I know, you know, at Gagan, we found that that's one of the critical differences of leading a big transformation versus some other aspects. Not that engagement's not always important, but in transformation, you have to really let people get in and roll around and mess with it. And how do you do that?
Oh, that's a tough one, because it depends upon the cycle that you're in or the phase of the transformation that you're in, how much rolling around they can do.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
We are right now working through the design and build phase. So we're really at the front end figuring stuff out. And so as we've worked through those particular pieces, we haven't allowed for a lot of rolling, because rolling then equals kind of out of scope kinds of things. So we've kept people pretty focused on the end result that we're looking for, and put guardrails in place. But within the guardrails, we've allowed them to be curious and to ask questions and to have conversation, cross-functional conversations, and pull each other in. I host a once-a-week team meeting. And really, the agenda is simply one line, sharing. And they share across their individual work streams how things are going, where their struggle is, where they don't understand, so that they can learn the same questions I'm asking, and they're in an area with lacking some expertise, they can have that conversation with their peer or their counterpart in a really safe space that is just like, you can have the moment of go, I don't get it. Like, can you draw me a picture in a safe space that nobody is going to be judgmental, that really, as people take a step back, are going to have the opportunity to learn and then to go out and to do something different. As I think, as we get further into testing, that's where we're really going to get people in there and start to be flexible and understand what we're doing and really get in the mud. And then go live is when it'll get really dirty.
You know, I imagine some people are listening to this and thinking, oh, that's really interesting. A meeting just on sharing. How do you structure that to keep it effective and efficient?
We literally do the Brady Bunch roundtable. I kick it off. I give a few updates around the things that are happening. And then I pass it. I pass the baton to somebody on the screen, and they give their update. And we've put some rules in place around moderation when we feel like we're, you know, deep diving too deep, or we're going down a rabbit hole. Somebody will say, rabbit hole, been too long on this topic. And just yesterday when we had our sharing meeting, we had to call it and say, we're out of time. We're done. Mm-hmm. Because you could spend all day sharing. Yeah. So we've done a great job when we started putting together some of the rules of the game. How do we moderate each other? How do we make sure we're not in the rabbit holes? And handing off to each other, but allowing for open discussion. So that's the recognition. And the team has done an amazing job sharing, moderating, and in some places going, that's not even a topic that should be here. Take it off this meeting. And they really moderate themselves sometimes.
Yeah, which is great. How big is the team in that particular meeting?
With me is 9.
9, so a workable size, yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
That's good. So I also want to ask you about M&As and post-merger integration, because you've done a lot in that space as well. What do you think are some of the most complex and emotional challenges around that?
People.
Everything would be easier if people weren't involved, right?
Right. Because you come in, you build a business case, you expect certain outcomes to happen. And as a result, there are certain triggers that have to be pulled. You know, obviously business cases, when you get in the weeds, you find out not always is the business case as pristine as you once thought. You're still trying to get to an outcome. And I think the hardest part of any M&A, any closure of any business is the people who have given their heart and soul to an organization and really making sure that you do right by them. And right is different in every different situation. If for me, it's making sure you over-communicate, you're transparent, and where you can, you do right. And whether right is monetary, reviewing people's resumes and helping people network, giving people access to connections they may not have, those things are critical as you go forward, because then people want to stay and help. And when there's an opportunity to return, people can always come home.
And are there any major lessons you've learned from all that that you'd want to share other than what you just told us?
The one most recent that I struggled with is recognizing as a leader, I'm not always the one to carry the message, which is hard. When you're leading an entire group of people, sometimes the message that's about to be delivered, while you may be the leader of the people, isn't always your message to bear. And there's a right message belonging to a right delivery individual. And I hate to use that, you know, kind of racy model, because there's emotion in being a leader. And as a leader, you are a person too. And what I learned in a couple of roles back was there were moments where the message, I had to walk away and internalize the message for myself and get the emotion out for me, then to be able to appropriately communicate to my team. And I really struggled with that, because for me, it was, I can go and I can deliver the message, until the message became so close that it was, I'm not sure I'm the right person. And then the pieces I had to work through were, why did I feel that way? Why did I feel like I should be delivering every message all the time and only I could? And then when the messages got really personal, why didn't I have the opportunity or give myself the grace to walk away for a few hours and go, what does this really mean? What emotionally is this telling me? So that I could then go back and be really supportive and in the right place and show up the way I needed to. So we as leaders are people too. We are just as emotionally involved as everyone around us. And sometimes you have to give yourself the grace of knowing that and taking that moment to go, got it.
Yeah, and that's one of the challenges I've seen in some of these things where we forget that we're asking the leaders. Leaders aren't just channels. They're actually the recipients, right? And that you do have to work it through for yourself before you can really appropriately lead others.
Absolutely.
And building that time into the system to allow for that. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, as you know, this podcast is titled Let Go and Lead.
Yeah.
And I don't know what you think of that concept, but I'd just love to hear that. And then what you think leaders most need to let go of.
So for me, let go and lead is, this is, it couldn't be more perfectly titled, because early in my career, I did not let go of anything. And I tried to lead everything, right? And as I've grown in my career, what I've learned is I am not the keeper of all keys, and that I have brilliant people who surround me that are smarter than I am, that are quite capable, that have the keys and will unlock lots of doors, and we can do that together. My role, and I say this to all of my teams, my role is to move rocks for you, so that you can do the great job that you do every day, so that you can use your expertise, you can use your team, you can use your partnerships, you can collaborate together. When you have a rock you can't move, come to me, I'll move that rock for you. That's my job. And then that allows people to blossom. I wish I had learned that earlier in my career, right? My job wasn't to just blaze the path and move the rocks and continue to blaze the path. Sometimes it was just moving the rocks. And I'd say the same thing for leaders. As you grow in your career, the roles change. And having an awareness of how your role shifts, and you don't have to control everything. You may need to have a finger in many things. That's different than controlling everything. And really connecting to your people. And I said at the start of the podcast, meeting people where they are, right? Every leader and every team member has had a different experience together. And just because a leader has, and I've had leaders say, oh, you're getting this person, good luck. And they turn right around. Well, every individual team member has a different experience with their leader. So take the opportunity to really connect, be present, and meet them where they are. Because where they are today may not be where they are tomorrow. And you could be the one who shifts that for them just by listening, helping, teaching, guiding, and being present. So,
well, I can't think of a better way to end than that. That's a great quote. Yep. Thanks, Luana. Really appreciate this. I should ask, though, is there anything else that you would like to share that I didn't ask?
No, Meryl, this is, boy, you've really made me think. So I'm glad I didn't study. That was a good thing. No, this has been great. Thank you so much. And the other piece I'll say is thank you for reminding me to ground myself, because this, you know, you remind yourself as you go through and have these conversations where you can do better and continue to reinforce. So thank you for the opportunity. This has been great.
Great for me too. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Let Go and Lead. I hope you enjoyed this conversation as much as I did. If you found this episode insightful, please follow us on Spotify and Apple Podcasts and subscribe to us on YouTube. And don't forget to check out past episodes and interviews on GaganMacDonald.com. Thanks for joining, and see you on the next episode of Let Go and Lead.